F1, number 24A.
Now we come to the Christ order which he gives, you see. First the world order, now the Christ order. And what does he want to show with that Christ order? See that the point is now here, we are still always under the roof category of the Christ, which says, well, the Christ is forcible. Now, what happens if human consciousness does not see the divine calculation, the divine calculus? If it resists it, then he begins to see, well, man is not at loss. He still will be saved, because the Christ will work on that material consciousness, that unscientific consciousness, to the point where it accepts it. And so he gives through the Christ translation now an illustration how the Christ is able to translate himself to the point of idea. How principle, you see, is able, has a method, so to say, to translate itself to the point of idea against every resistance. We'll see that very clearly. In order to show that, he takes the history of Israel over the last 70 or 100 years before he prophesies, and shows them how, at the beginning of this Christ translation, the people were not willing to serve principle, to work for principle and serve principle and be with principle, but they had a personal standpoint and wanted to have their personal standpoint to be established. And then he shows through the Christ translation, through seven stages, how in Judaic history God was forcing them step by step by step to give up that resistance, until finally at the end of the Christ translation man has accepted it in its fullness. See, now what you have asked a day or two ago, you ask, well, why doesn't the prophet show the Christ translation as principle, life, truth and love, soul, spirit, mind? They haven't shown it because they always took that as one fact, as a finished fact, which says, yes, I go out from that fact that the Christ is that which translates principle to the point of idea. They have always taken that. But now, you see, now in Zechariah, where he has to show the calculus, he has to show the method of that translation. And so he shows it through the history of Judah. Just to first give a preview of it before I go through the tones, you will see that in principle, it will be the situation before captivity, when they were against the prophet's prophecy. Then life shows them when they were in captivity. Then truth shows them how they were brought back to Jerusalem, how they were saved from captivity, brought back to Jerusalem. Then in love, he shows them what the difference it is going to make, and it has been made by building the temple, how it was before they built the temple, now it was after they built the temple. Then when he has established that ideal, he begins to show that that ideal begins now to translate all the surrounding countries. All the surrounding countries translates it, and then, so it spreads further out, you see, its influence on the surrounding countries, its reformatory power on the surrounding countries. And then in spirit, he shows that this brings peace to all the world, so that finally, may come to mind, that finally man really is accepting that Christ and is shining like that Christ. So can you see what the historic, what historical illustration he has taken? He has taken Israel's actual resistance to accept the Christ. And the prophet says, now I take that that illustration and show you that Israel couldn't for a long run resist that Christ translation. That principle has in itself that irresistible power to translate itself down to the point where every man accepts principle. Is that clear how the purpose of it? See, the purpose of this Christ translation. Well, he shows it first, how the people, before they went into captivity, that they were coming and asking the priests and prophets and said, should we weep and should we fast as they have done so many years? In other words, they were asking, can we through our ways and means influence the Divine Holy One? And the Lord's answer was, did ye at all fast unto me, even to me? Did not ye eat for yourself and drink for yourselves? You see, that was the proposition. He said, I know you. He said, the prophet said, I knew your father. They wanted to do things according to their own will. They wanted to fast, they wanted to do all these things in religion, but for their own sake. Did not ye eat for yourself and drink for yourself? You see, they didn't want to build, was what Haggai said, to build the temple, to work for the glory of God. They wanted to do it for themselves. Now that had to be broken. You see, that had to be broken. How can it be broken if there is resistance towards the law of Haggai? And so Zechariah says, well, the Christ is that power which breaks every unprincipled standpoint down and down and down, saves man from himself until he is freed from it. So, he says, all right, the way how the Christ did work, did you remember, Israel? The Christ as life brought them down into captivity. Because they did not want to be principled, because they had no mercy, because they did not execute true judgment, because they showed no mercy nor compassion, everyone to each other, and because they did oppress the widow and the fatherless and the stranger and the poor, you see, because they were not principled, but just full of personal sins, the counterfeit of principle, he says, then life just didn't want that to go on living. Life said death to that unprincipled sense. And the way he shows that life could do it is to take them just right out of Israel and put them down into Babylon and into captivity. They refused to hearken, they stopped their ears, they made their hearts as an adamant stone. Therefore came a great wrath from the Lord of hosts. He scattered them among all the nations. Thus the land was desolate after them. Can you see the tone of life? The tone of life which just comes to the unprincipled sense and says, death to an unprincipled sense. And I can do that by taking away a right out from inheritance and putting you down into the dispersion, into Assyria and then into Babylon. But naturally, he sees, well, the purpose of the Christ is not to destroy, but to help, but to save. So he goes further and says, you see, the Christ is something much nicer than what you think. He does not just want to destroy, he wants to help you, he saves you. So he gives a sense that he says, what happened then in captivity? You know, in captivity, when you really began to yield to a principled sense and to a merciful sense, then truth came and took you back to Jerusalem. So he saves you from captivity. It saves you from Babylon. And so they returned Thus says the Lord, I am returned unto Zion and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. So he comes back to Jerusalem. But reformed now, you see, saved from that unprincipled sense. And Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth. See, no more a city of unrighteousness, of unmercifulness, and so on. A city of truth. And then he shows how the city will be just full of young girls and young men and of old men and of old women, just showing a sense of manhood that is lasting. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls. I will save my people. I will bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and I will be their God in truth and in righteousness. One just can't mistake these tones. One knows the tones of the synonym, one just can read them as one can read a novel. So easy. Then, when he has shown that, he says, all right, now I reinstated you into your promised land again. You have gone through the mill of Babylon, and you have been cleansed and weaned away from your false doings and so on. Then he shows love and shows, now, if you do that what Haggai said, to build the temple, then you will see that love is really meaning well with you, is loving you, is really that love which never loses sight of loveliness. He said, how was it before you founded the temple? He said, there was utter lack at that time. They had near the famine at that time for several years. He said, before you built the temple, you had a lot of enemies, because at that time all the various Canaanite tribes tried to push the exiles that came back again out of their countries. And then he said, but now, after you have built the temple, what do you see? See, now he gives them a full sense. The seed shall be prosperous, the vine shall give her fruit, the ground shall give her increase, the heaven shall give their due. I will cause the remnant of this people to possess all these things. Ye shall be a blessing. Ye shall be a blessing. I will do well unto Jerusalem. And then he shows that all the people will be attracted to Jerusalem. Many people and strong nations shall come to seek the Lord, the hosts of Jerusalem. See, can you see now? Then, now he's at the point of building the temple. It says how that gives back all that has been lost before. And then it shows, but this ideal which I have shown you is a never transforming ideal. Now we come to soul, where the ideal is now translated to every plane of thought. Therefore, it's a reforming idea, a transforming idea. And he shows now how even the heathen countries, all the surrounding countries, and he talks about them, the various surrounding countries, I think about 10 of them, he counts them, how all they, those heathen, will be transformed. But even the heathen shall be reformed and shall identify them with the Lord of God, because he shows that their remnant shall be transformed. But he that remaineth, even he shall be for our God. He even sees to see that the heathen who had other gods, you see, would be reformed to that point where they begin to acknowledge the God of Israel, that they would now have Israel's God as their God, and he shall be as a governor in Judah. You see how one has to read these things quite with having in mind really what happened. You see that what he says is that even those heathen governors, those heathen kings, will come back to the Lord of Jerusalem and will be just as much as the governors in Judah. An enormous transformation. Something actually which could only have been written long, long back after the exile just before, say, perhaps 200 or 300 years before Jesus, because at that point thought in Jerusalem was, in Judah was ready to accept the universality of the God. And so Jerusalem will lay safe. And then he shows how through that transforming power, as that transforming power goes out and out and out, that naturally in that way spirit is being demonstrated, namely that there will be no more enemies, that there will be no more opposition, that there will be pure reflection everywhere, peace and no more warfare. I will cut off the chariots from Ephraim, I will cut off the horses from Jerusalem, and the battle bow shall be cut off. The sense of war, the warfare, is cut off. And there is only God's Spirit, really, who leads the warfare. And he shall speak peace unto the heathen. Spirit which comes and brings pure reflection. And then the tone of mind, after that has been pacified, you see, then he can say, well, if there is no more anything against the Lord, you see, if there is nothing anymore against the Lord, then everything is for the Lord, is for the Lord. And the Lord their God shall save them as the flock of his people. And the young men and the maids shall be as the stones of a crown, or as holy stones cast upon his land. In other translation, that's the Aramaic translation, in other translation it says that all those boys and girls are rejoicing and rejoicing as glittering stones. You say glittering? Glittering stones. See, he comes now to the, you see, he has started by showing that the human mentality was resisting the obedience to the divine principle, that they want to do all for themselves, to their own sake, for their own good, and not to subordinate itself to principle. So Zechariah shows, now I show you an illustration in human history, he says to the people, and I show you, and you can't deny it, that there is in being a fact going on, which we call the Christ, which is nothing else than the idea of God, which says, I am God and I am going to work and to work and to work on any situation until the idea of God is brought out in its fullness, in its glory, as a glistering stone, as a holy stone cast upon the land, as the stones of a crown, as another translation says it. So that we feel, you see, that we feel now principle has translated itself to the point of the purity of the idea, the bigness of the idea, the value of the idea, where the idea of God is now being manifested. Is that clear, this translation, what he wants to show? See, he shows it in the Christ order. Principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind. Now, is it the Christ order? You see, so often, say, we read a book or a text and so on, and then we say, oh, I see in it the Christ order. Or I see in it the Christianity order. Because, perhaps I would say, oh, I see in it the Christ order. First I see in the text principle, and then I see life, and then I see truth, and then I see love, and then I see soul, and then spirit, and then mind. But we can't be satisfied with that. That is not yet a clue that we have found the true interpretation of it. See, when we go through a text, and when each one of us studies a text and finds somehow a structure in it and an order in it, it's not enough to see that the text yields the arrangement of either the word order or the arrangement of either the Christ order or the arrangement of the Christianity order or of science order. If we have found the true interpretation, as John Dolly here gives it, saying with the Christ order, it isn't so much a fact that we see first principle and then we see life in the text and then truth in the text and love. What it must yield and what is the clue that we have found the true interpretation is that the arrangement, I call it arrangement, of the synonyms give the order of the Christ translation. See, if it doesn't give the purpose of the Christ translation, the inherent sense of the Christ translation, then we must be very careful and say, well, perhaps I didn't find the true interpretation yet. I can show that here in Zechariah so well, because in Zechariah we can see the purpose of the Christ order so well. See, because it starts with God saying, well, I have a principle, and working to the point where man, the idea, is brought out in its fullness. Then, if the arrangement of the synonyms in the Christ order also gives the whole sense of a translation from God to man to the point where the idea is manifested in its full light, then we have the key that the interpretation is right. Can you see that? Because that's something we have to see, that a text cannot just be laid out by saying, oh, I see here first principle, and then I see here life, and then I see truth, and then love, and then, oh, I could also see here soul, and then spirit, and then mind, and then they say, oh, that's the Christ order. The proof that it is the Christ order, and that our interpretation is right, is not the arrangement of the synonyms. Is that clear? Not the arrangement of the synonyms. The proof of it is if that arrangement of the synonym is an order. The order of God to man. The order of the translation of God to idea. That behind it is that Christ translation which says, well, I am principle and I jolly well are going to translate myself until my idea is manifested in its fullness. Having shown this, in Zechariah, you see, having shown first the word order, that consciousness is a consciousness of ideas, then through the Christ order, that consciousness is the Christ consciousness, where principle always comes to our consciousness with the sole purpose of bringing out in ourselves that glittering stone, that man is God's beloved and glorified idea. Then he goes on to Christianity and gives the Christianity order. And again here, we must see, is it the Christianity order or is it just an arrangement of the synonymous terms as principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth and love? Or is really what he wants to convey, you see, what he wants to convey, is it really the Christianity sense and the Christianity purpose? Well, here we see it very, very clearly. No, perhaps in one or the other instance, I must say I had some difficulties. But in the whole, I think it's a very clear illustration how we can pinpoint that order really as the Christianity order. Because what does the Christianity order say now to us? It says, well, every idea is always in principle, is always closed with the whole of God, is always empowered and with the whole of God. The idea is always in God. See, the Christ translation said, principle comes and translates itself to the point where the idea of principle is manifested willy-nilly. Once it is manifested as the full idea, then we can't stop there and say, well, what is this full idea? Then we come to Christianity and say, well, this full idea is the idea of the whole of principle. It's close with the whole of principle. This idea is close with the whole of mind. This idea is close with the whole of soul and of spirit and of life and truth and love. But the idea is close with the whole. And that is what Zachariah, in his illustration, wants to bring out rather clearly and rather nice. You see, that's why I think Mrs. Eddy, when she gives that Christianity order in the glossary, that the synonyms are always separate from each other, not through a comma, but through a semicolon. Semicolon. Just as to say, not as to say, you see, that to say, well, each one of us is, so to say, complete. That each idea of mind is always close with the whole of mind. And is something complete in itself. Now let's see how he shows that here. How the focus, you see, is now on idea, and showing the idea closed always with the bigness of God. Every idea, really, principle and so on. The first subject, therefore, is principle in the Christianity order, principle. And it shows here that the idea, I would say, has the whole authority of principle. Can you spiritually hear, you see, that the focus is on the idea in its God? And he says, well, don't ask persons, but ask the Lord. Don't ask the diviners. They only speak lie, and they only see lie. They have only false dreams. Ask ye the Lord. See, he goes to the ye, to the idea, to that men and that boys and girls who are like glistering stones, and says, go ye now to the Lord, back to the to Lord. See, it's always that now from idea, seeing it himself as an idea of God. Ask ye the Lord, so the Lord shall give them showers of rain. And then he says, the Lord of hosts has visited his flock, the house of Judah. Out of this house of Judah, you see, now the house of Judah is the idea, you see, is now in the focus. Out of house of Judah come forth the corner, the nail, the battle bow. This doesn't make any sense, really, when one reads it. What is a corner and what is a nail and what is a battle bow? Many other translations, in German and so on, they give quite a different rendering in it, which makes that whole thing very understandable. He said, out of Judah, out of the house of Judah, come forth the princes, they are the corners, the leaders, that's the nail, and the captains, the battle bow. It's translated like that. See, at once, out of Judah, not out of God, out of Judah, come forth ideas with authority. Princes, leaders, captains. Various degrees of people of authority. People crowned with principle. Can you see that?